Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Tucker's in no hurry.
No.
Everybody wants him to answer the question.
Nor should he be. But
nor should he be. We have to ask and he has to evade.
Can't really give you anything, so.
And that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And he can just keep swinging and people can keep comparing him to Ted Williams.
What? Bro, what are you talking about, man?
Boy, I mean.
That was something?
Yeah, I just don't know enough about Ted. You know, I know that
I'm. Swing!
A lot of people say to swing level, which isn't too bad. Others say to swing down at the ball, which I think is real bad. But to me, the ideal swing has always been one that was slightly up. Slightly up.
The sweetest swing ever.
I understand that, and I know that I'm the elder statesman of the group, but I wasn't around for Ted Williams' day.
That's why they did a documentary.
I know.
And that's why they asked Kyle Tucker to use his swing.
I don't know. I'm just here to play some baseball.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I'm happy with it.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Well, Mr. David. Good to be back. Had a doctor's appointment yesterday, and I'm here.
Welcome back, Mully. Happy Wednesday.
Yeah.
You return as the Cubs triumphant over the Pirates.
Boy,
that was fun to watch.
Dominating. It wasn't that much fun because you got nervous when Shohei left after, 87 pitches or something?
When Shota Imanaga left with a cramp, you feared it was worse.
You're
relaxing a bit as a Cub fan knowing it's just a cramp. We'll see if it compromises his next start. Doesn't sound that way. But let's not quibble. After losing 2 out of 3 to the Phillies, the Cubs needed this. So this was a welcome sight. They had a day off, and we all overreacted to what they didn't have and what was going to happen next. The Pirates are a nice team to play after losing 2 out of 3.
That honest to God, it was like watching a Sox game. It just, you had like...
In what way?
There weren't a heck of a lot of people who showed up. It was like you're used to the Cubs kind of being treated a little bit differently, and you didn't really get it.
9,434 witnesses. That was the announced crowd. Early in the game, Zach made his estimate on the attendance game, and he said 10,000 flat. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's only 10,000 people there? No wonder it sounds so quiet.
Empty.
And empty on the broadcast. They did a terrific job. We'll get to that in a moment. But I see what you mean.
The energy level.
There was
the
no
crowd,
energy.
I'm just saying.
How many people
it
do you think?
It was a good performance, but it was like.
It was an excellent performance. The bats came alive. 4 home runs.
Yes.
Craig Counsell reconfigured the lineup. Good for him.
Yes.
Responding to a slumping Dansby Swanson, putting him 8th, and Dansby responds with a torpedo bat home run.
Torpedo bat.
Well, who knows? It's got to be one reason why.
Beautiful.
There's got to be a reason why he hits a homer. So that was the good news. Shota had it. He was rolling.
He was great.
Jim DeShays said during the broadcast on the Marquee Sports Network, this is a pitcher's sweet spot. They had a 4-0 lead, then it grew, and he was feeling it. There were people there with signs of Shota Imanaga and big heads and all those things, and he was in a groove. And then the inning later, he had a cramp.
Yeah,
JD jinxed him.
Unfortunately, I wasn't listening. I was watching, and it seemed like, what? His knee? How did he hurt his knee? And you watch it again. He didn't hurt his knee. Did he hurt his knee? I just had a lot more anxiety about that than I needed.
I'll say this. Once again, Ron Coomer is outstanding because he sees a different game than everybody else.
Right.
He sees the nuance. He sees the subtlety. He sees the kinds of things that can be easy to miss. And he was on this immediately. He noticed and referenced during the broadcast that Shota, an inning earlier, has pounding his quad.
Yeah.
And so he thought it was a cramp right away. This is what it sounded with Ron Coomer, Dr. Coomer to us, correctly diagnosed.
He is the doctor.
Shota Imanaga's cramp.
Expecting him to do well, and now Shota, they're going out to see Nick Frangella, Craig Counsell, and all going out to see about Shota.
It looked like he was limping ever so slightly as he walked off the mound.
Well, and I told you that last inning he was pounding his, what would be his left quad, And it was almost like you do that sometimes if you're getting a cramp or something, like you're trying to release the cramp or a tight muscle. And now that's kind of what they're, you know, he's leaning on his right leg and, you know, they're kind of, I think he's coming out of the game. Craig Council wants him to come out of the game, yeah.
Shota walking okay. I don't see any noticeable limp as he walks off the field, but he will leave here in the sixth inning. After the leadoff double by Andrew McCutchen, Shota will leave with a 4-0 advantage. It's his game to win, and nobody was throwing in the Cub bullpen, so whomever it is will get all the time they need to get ready. I'm pretty sure that's the way that'll work.
He was on it. And so,
and that is so true. People do that.
They do that when they're trying to prevent a cramp.
Yes.
And it sounded like Coombe had was speaking from experience.
Yes, no question.
As a guy who's probably had his share.
Yeah.
And it made you feel better, Molly, because I think when you watch it and you don't know what they're talking about, and with the pitcher, you never know.
Right.
But you fear it's an arm thing.
Right.
And you're like, oh, my gosh, Justin Steele to Shota Imanaga. What's going to happen next? Who can Jed get? And then it's like, oh, it's a cramp.
But then the other thing is when you say that it's a knee – you never know what a knee means, right?
Yeah.
A knee is also I think you need a knee to pitch. I put it that way.
Yes, there are degrees of concern when you hear body parts mentioned.
Exactly.
The arm, the knee, and then, a quad, a cramp. We can live with that, hopefully.
Yeah, that'll be okay.
That'll be okay.
That's,
because the Cubs need to take care of business.
Just don't stay up all night. on the
get your fluids.
Yeah.
Have a couple bananas. Get your potassium levels up.
Carlos Zambrano, don't be online with your brother all night.
Don't get carpal tunnel syndrome.
Exactly.
That was the craziest. That was one of the crazier Chicago sports injuries.
Yeah, it was great.
Up there with Chris Sale falling out of the truck. Kerry Wood in the hot tub going way back.
I mean, the greatest of all time is anything connected with Jose Cardinal. There are some unbelievable Jose Cardinal injury stories. His eyelid, one year he might not be able to start the season because his eyelid was kind of shut.
Yeah.
He was sleeping and he couldn't get his eyelid open. Come on. Have you ever heard that
one? No, never heard that one. Ever again.
The cricket, remember he had a cricket that got in his room and he couldn't get any sleep?
So
and he was
a colorful player.
He'd be able to start
good
the season.
Good old Jose Cardinal.
Oh, my God. He had so many great
I love that
ones.
Baseball card. How about Brian Griese, the former quarterback for the Bears? Was he not the one who tripped in his driveway or tripped on his stairs?
I mean, there were a lot of tripping over dogs, as I recall.
Fell over a duffel or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it? Who
and Boozer.
Over?
Didn't Carlos Boozer?
Brian Robinson fell over his dog.
Brian Robinson, former defensive tackle. Yeah, there's some definite
he either fell
memorable
over a dog
injuries.
Or he fell out of some kind of a vehicle.
Sammy Sosa was sneezing, and then he pulled
a rib, back muscle or
rib
something,
cartilage
right?
or
a rib cartilage?
Something like that. Yeah, Texas to remember this.
Oh, my gosh.
Kyle Farnsworth hurting his foot drunk on a jet ski?
Oh, that'll happen.
Those jet skis are dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, he just happened to be on a jet ski.
Hey, yesterday felt like jet ski season. Yeah, right. Didn't yesterday feel nice? Wasn't it nice?
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful.
Nice spring day.
It was really.
I was at the rate and felt like we did the Big Pro Football Show in the Chicago lead out there.
You look great on that set.
You like the set?
It was beautiful. I told you, I want to go there and
it's
see
so
the
cool.
Set.
You should come out and see it. You're welcome anytime.
You called yourself an interloper, did you? Or you kind of joked about it?
I was kind of kidding about that. But I think what happens is that.
Because you're doing a football show.
It was a football show
stadium.
In a baseball park.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt like that was funny. But
it was good.
It was a real nice backdrop. And
beautiful.
Certainly it's good to be out there. We're back out there tonight. And they had warned me because Ozzy by the end of the night had a scarf on because he was, he gets so cold easily. And they had said, hey, you might want to layer up because it's going to be cold. I'm like, really? It's not going to be that cold. It was beautiful.
Yeah, was it windy?
It was windy.
Wind was an issue. I was at an outdoor track meet yesterday.
Oh, nothing like spring sports to test your mettle.
Junior high track meet. I went there kind of sweating. And by the time I got home, I was freezing.
True.
Yeah, that happens.
I could see that. Those spring sports events, they really test your loyalty as a parent.
We took the kids to San Francisco one point years ago, and we were on this bus. Like, we did this, like, bus thing where they just took you around. The weather dropped. I mean, it was, like, in the high 40s, and we had, like, just, like, little jackets, and there was a woman there who was, like, a Swedish tourist, and I said to her, excuse me, I'm going to have to borrow that parka. She had a full parka on. She was like, no, I'm cold. Like, I just asked her if I could please have her coat.
And did she oblige?
Well,
She said, security?
It was a funny moment because I was doing it in front of my kids.
That's funny.
For the children. For the children.
It was for their amusement. San Francisco in the springtime anytime is a similar weather to Chicago because it feels very...
All of a sudden, variable comes up out of nowhere, and you're
In San Francisco, the fog will roll in.
Oh, the fog!
The fog! Yeah. Don't forget about the fog.
Oh no!
It will roll in unexpectedly and be a little more spooky.
It's not even spooky. Then you're fighting against all of your inner demons to not commit a crime.
You are. You know, what? It's much more tempting to commit a felony in San Francisco because of the weather conditions.
The cover of darkness.
Yes.
What should we do? Let's rob a hobcat.
I'm glad I don't live there. Yeah. Cost of living and the temptation.
What is wrong with you? It's awful.
But then I stayed a little bit for the Sox game. I didn't stay for the whole thing because obviously things were going on and had to get home. But it was a fun night to be at the ballpark just because it was a beautiful night.
Yes.
Sox did not deliver. The Brewers, they find ways. They're not going anywhere in that NL Central. Yep. Pat Murphy,
Friend of
the show.
Friend of the program.
They manufacture runs. They don't have as much power as some other teams are going to play, but they will find a way to score.
No doubt.
They've got Jose Quintana 4-0. How about that?
I got to tell you, I'm watching mainly the Cub game, but I was switching back and forth, as you do whenever there's a break. I had absolutely zero confidence when the Sox were leading 2-1 for a very long period of time.
Yeah.
No faith whatsoever that they were either going to add to that. That is the 20th game, 20-something game, where they've only scored a couple runs.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Less than 3 runs.
Oh, ye of little offense.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you don't have faith.
Yeah, you look great when you're sitting there in the studio, but the team behind you has got to be improved. Talk about the baseball team.
I hear you. I hear you. It's something to see because
they ought to send.
Where will they get the offense?
Listen, they gotta just go through the lineup, right?
Yeah.
Vaughny, Dustin kind of mentioned it. Miguel Vargas. These are people that belong in Arizona. They need to get personal training in Arizona.
Since they're sending Colson Montgomery there, wonder if they could get a companion fare. Fly two for one.
There you go.
Because there's a couple guys that need the individual instruction that he's going there to receive.
Yeah, he's not alone, Colson Montgomery.
Well, okay, if you're sending guys out, you need to bring guys in. Tim Elko, your plane is ready.
I don't even want to get into how long I've been submitting questions about Tim Elko for the pick six, and Dustin keeps rejecting
him. We talked about him yesterday.
Well, that's because I wasn't here.
Stay tuned.
Also, that's a tease, listeners.
Yeah.
So what about Tim Elko and Gage Workman?
You got Gage Workman. What are you doing? Why are you rolling Miguel Vargas out there?
How is he going to execute his vendetta if he's not in the lineup?
They're saving him up for the Cubs series.
Are they?
Oh, he wants to beat the Cubs. I mean, that's a very interesting reaction.
That was out of context, but yes.
How is it out of context?
It wasn't out of context. It was out of context only because it wasn't as pointed, I think, as if you isolate that last sentence of the longer comment.
Did he say it or not?
He did say it.
He did say it.
Okay. I know I'm not the wordsmith, but I don't think that's out of context.
It's the only thing a Sox fan is listening for.
I hear you. I'm not going to diminish and deprive you of that.
No.
I think it's awesome.
And Dustin, he's now in the Terrio school of
he's on the list.
Bad guy. Yeah.
Really, Gage?
He's on the other side of the rivalry. Brian Terrio, the riot.
I could email you an extended version of the Really Gage if you'd like, Molly.
Well, I think Gage Workman now put a little spice in the Crosstown series, which is in a couple weeks, right? May 16th.
Yeah.
Crosstown Series.
Okay, let's go.
That's when the soft portion of the Cubs schedule begins. Although my
and David's popcorn party.
And my popcorn party.
That is the day of days, huh? That popcorn party. I mean, that's
taking on a life of its own.
Hey, we're going to be giving away chances to win, for God's sake.
I know.
You want to be a part of this. I mean, think about it. Not only do you get to come in here and see our beautiful studios and hang out with us, but you also get popcorn from Mr. David. I can't
wait. Nuts on Clark.
Nuts on Clark is going to deliver. I love the way Mitch has put this together, where we get to see if David can make good popcorn. But don't worry, because Nuts on Clark is
We got a backup plan.
We got good popcorn.
That's
no
confidence
what.
Right that there.
That is the man behind the
yes.
man.
Yes.
He's kind of...
Mitch thinks of everything.
He's going to push you off the cliff.
Hey, we like this idea. It's really kind of fun. Let's do this. You can make the popcorn. Okay. Yeah. By the way,
yeah.
We need a sponsor. We need a backup.
We need real
popcorn. We don't trust him. He might blow up the kitchen.
Honestly, because it's like baking grease and stuff. I've been thinking about it. Like I'm like, yeah.
I got to start preparing.
Got to get myself up.
I got to start preparing.
Fire extinguisher. I'll be standing right behind you.
That would be great.
Ready to pounce.
Be a great image.
I've got to start preparing.
Best fireman in town.
Oh, that's great stuff.
That's what
we're
going to
have
the
a
closers.
Blast. Yeah. We are going to have a blast, and you're going to get a chance to join us. So, stay tuned.
May 16th, the Sox and the Cubs. I think this is the beginning of the Cubs. Soft portion of the schedule. They should take care of business tonight
in think
Pittsburgh. Matthew Boyd.
Aren't they in the soft spot?
I think this begins it.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh begins it.
Yes.
Matthew Boyd tonight should win because you need to stack up the first two victories of the series because Paul Skenes comes calling tomorrow. See, and I don't like that.
I like that because like that gives a little juice to the series. I like that.
Thank you.
No, I like that they're facing Skenes. I like watching Skenes. I don't like their chances against Skenes.
Well, I mean, I think it'd be fun because there could be a crowd out there. So, you know, you'll get PCA maybe feeding off like the negativity.
That guy is unbelievable.
He's great.
The way that he turns on inside pitches is just impressive because he's not the largest guy, but he can turn and all of a sudden he's got that power. I am very... Like most Cub fans, this isn't like a unique thought, but he is among the most fun players to watch in the city, and he's emerging as one of the best players in the league.
He's becoming an all-star.
He is.
In front of our eyes. But you know, I've always had a fear that people will turn on you. So
he does.
I know he can do that.
He can't turn on you. Just throw him an inside fastball and watch. He'll be like your disloyal friend.
Yes,
he'll turn on
you
quickly.
You That's right.
But a year ago, and I guess this is what you hope is the case, right? You're always looking for these examples. A year ago, and even to a lesser degree, maybe when he first was brought up in 2023, he was struggling mightily.
Yeah.
And you started to wonder and question all these predictions and projections about
Dustin.
Him being this top prospect. Dustin maybe never wavered in his faith, but a lot of us did. And a lot of people did around PCA. Is there a parallel to be drawn between the way that he did not have, you know, linear success, as they say? It was down, then it was back up, and now he's taking a next step to either Colson Montgomery or Matt Shaw?
Maybe Matt Shaw.
Maybe. I hope so. I hope for both of them. But I do wonder, you know, we'll talk about Colson Montgomery at the pick six. That was a real... I don't want to overstate it, but like a devastating blow for Sox fans to hear Chris Getz at the end of the 30-minute session yesterday drop that in, that the top prospect in the Sox system, really, from a positional standpoint.
The one-time top prospect.
One-time top prospect. You're right, because he's not any longer.
It's sad, but.
You don't know where he goes from here, but you hope that is just a blip. But.
How does this hit you as also an Indiana schoolboy legend when you see another Indiana schoolboy legend not live up to, you know what I mean? Did you, on your route here, ever have any kind of...
Oh, yes. Bouts of crisis of confidence.
Did you take a trip to Arizona?
There were a couple clunker columns that really made me question whether or not it belonged. And then I just went to... You know, got out my thesaurus, got out my Strunk and White Elements of Style. I really went back to the basics and said,
politics.
You know what? Got to shorten things up. Got to go back to the fundamentals, and then maybe the next time those 750 words are going to sing.
You gotta sit down with them. Let's be honest. That's what they need.
And he gets up to
the
majors.
Companion.
I hope he figures it out.
You know, I think it is a cautionary tale for all young people following. Whatever you do, don't buy the hype of prospects. Whatever you do. It's going to bite you and you will regret it. And when someone is trying to feed you or sell you the future as opposed to the present, that means they're not trying. And you should be aware of it and not buy in because it'll break your
heart. Valid words of caution, but I think also what makes this sting a little bit more even is because it wasn't just the White Sox internally believing and ranking Colson Montgomery at the top of these lists. It was the rest of minor league baseball. It was the rest of the people who do this for the living, the Jim Callises of the world. Colson Montgomery was high on many of those charts and rankings, and then his swing got longer, and his defense got more. It became a little bit more obvious that he wasn't
got balkier.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Less fluid, and he didn't look like a natural shortstop, and maybe that one back issue has created a lot of these other problems that don't seem to be going away.
Well, I mean, you know, here's my problem with the whole thing, and we'll get into it. But, you know, the guy had success in Arizona. Arizona's not the problem. The problem is playing in Chicago.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be here playing in Chicago. And unfortunately, he's unable to do that. They put him in Charlotte, and the guy is having a disaster.
Why send to Arizona?
They send him to Arizona because he's their number one.
It's warm.
So much invested.
It's predictable.
In him.
The weather's perfect.
They're going to give him, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. We'll see how long. I don't believe it's a week where he's getting hitting school,
yeah.
And they're going to just work on his swing. And you know what? I mean, it's not a bad idea. Because something has to change.
Well, they should send him to San Francisco to deal with the elements that you're going to deal with in Chicago. As a texter points out, remember, is it Mark Twain, the quote, "The coldest winter of my life was a summer I spent in San Francisco."
I got to tell you, it's totally true. It's totally true.
I love
true.
That. Yeah. I love our texters coming through this morning.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Thank you, Mark Twain.
Yeah, take a bow there, 630.
We got back from this trip that we took, this bus thing I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. We got back. We got into the hotel. We got up to our room, and the five of us crawled under the covers in the one bed and just tried to warm up with body heat as much as anything. It was so much fun. We were laughing pretty, you know, it was, but I'm not kidding. It was like one of the coldest days of my life.
If you take a trip to San Francisco, 4 to 5 days, if you're there, you know that one of them is going to be a terrible weather day. You
so
just can
true.
Count on that.
So true. All right, we got to get to the Pick Six. We're going to pick apart all of the wonderful stories of the day and some of the horrors of the day. And we'll do that next in the Pick Six. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Should the Cubs fans enjoy an easy win over the Pirates or be concerned about Shota Imanaga leaving in the sixth with leg cramps? Is it possible to do both? What did you think of the Cubs' explanation?
Yeah, you know, I felt relieved about that because concern about someone's knee, especially a pitcher, you know, you need your knees. You need your legs to be under you. I know it's about being able to pitch in your arm and your slot, all the rest of it, but you got to have your body right. And his body wasn't right, and that was disconcerting, to say the least. But, yeah, the Cubs' explanation was fine. I think that Ron Coomer's explanation was excellent, and I wish I had taken the time to sync up. But I don't want to be mean about it. It just was bothersome that he got it so much more correct than you know. Just don't scare someone. Yeah, my mind was racing, and I was thinking, like, who is the pitcher they can least afford to lose right now? it's got to be him.
Oh,
it's got to be Shota by a mile. And then
he's
I was like,
ace.
But who's the player? Like, who is there a position player that you
Tuck.
Would
rate?
I know. And
it's
so,
a great one.
So you start going through this little mental exercise as you're watching something, and that ruined the easy win over Pittsburgh. I think the Cubs deserve this kind of a series against a team this bad. And I like that they got one game that'll energize you because they got a good pitcher.
It should be enjoyable to have the great win and then worry about Shota. You should be able to do both. This Cub fan could not. I was pacing around the basement. I wanted a piece of information, some little tiny nugget, something. I had to wait for Craig Counsell's postgame
right.
to feel slightly better about the situation. But now, you know, tomorrow is today. So now I think it's going to be very interesting to hear from Pittsburgh, from our pregame here at 5:05, what is going on? What's the word? How did Shota wake up this morning? How did he return to the park? So these are things you worry about, and it was a lifeless crowd in Pittsburgh last night.
I like that you had words of Craig Counsell that comforted you last night.
Amazing, huh?
That doesn't happen too often, but they did last night. Yeah, you feel better about it because it was only a cramp. You're worried about the arm issue or even the knee being an issue, but this was a victory to enjoy. Maybe it took a little bit longer, delayed gratification, but thank goodness you're able to enjoy it. The Cubs get back on track. The offense is revived. 4 home runs. Seiya has quite a night, and that was nice to see. Carson Kelly moves into the cleanup spot. What did we talk about yesterday?
All-star Carson.
We talked about moving up to fifth, but I didn't think that they would put Bushy fifth against the lefty. That's why Craig Counsell did it. There is a method to his madness. So he did what we talked about. Move the catcher up, move Dansby Swanson down. Both guys homered.
He must have the Odyssey app.
He must have the Odyssey app, and it works in Pittsburgh. And if he was listening in the dugout, we'd have heard it on the broadcast because it was so quiet there at PNC Park. But this was a good victory for the Cubs because they got to use their B team, their B bullpen arm to finish it, the arms to go through the final 4 innings. Daniel Palencia took forever to get ready. Did that take forever?
He's allowed
I know.
As long as he wants.
But
I
thought he was gonna take an hour
exactly.
and a half.
Exactly.
Like, okay.
Yeah, I can take my time? We'll watch this. But whenever a pitcher walks off the mound with a trainer, you don't feel right.
You don't feel right?
Okay, next question.
That's the voice of Ozzie. He'll be answering questions at 8 a.m. How disastrous is the news that 149 hitter Colson Montgomery will be heading to the White Sox complex in Arizona for what looks like a crash course on his disastrous swing in an effort to save his failing career? What does it say to you about the once highly regarded prospect when he's unable to stay at AAA? Do you believe any of this will work?
Well, methinks that the author of this question thinks that this is disastrous. There is a disaster. It doesn't have to be. I think when you take a deep breath, you want to look at this. Look, there's no way to sugarcoat this. This is a real bad development for the development of Colson Montgomery. This is not progress. The hope is that you are taking 2 steps backward to take 1 step forward. And that would be the ideal situation. There's very little confidence that's going to happen because this is so unorthodox. But what the White Sox are trying to do here, and talking to some people at the park yesterday and just seeing what the reaction to it, Ryan Fuller came over from Baltimore as a director of hitting. He has done this before. I think it was Cedric Mullins, perhaps. But there have been other examples of guys who have gotten this isolated personal instruction. They're hoping to have the same effect on Colson Montgomery so he finds out how to shorten his swing. Ozzie broke it down post-game last night perfectly. He could do this. We'll talk to him at 8 o'clock. The swing is too long. He may be affected by the back, but he's not making contact, and he's not having a plan. He was 4 for his last 38. Oh. The Sox wanted to avoid 2 demotions in 40 days. That would really wreck a guy's psyche. Sent him to Arizona, tried to get back in a good headspace. He had some success out there during the Arizona Fall League. Who knows, Molly? It's a hard thing to take. It doesn't have to be disastrous, even though it's trending in that direction.
I was surprised to see this, to hear this. I thought the White Sox made an error by sending him to the minors in the first place, because he just had a bad – I mean, if you base things off of spring training, I mean, King Tuck was going to be a bust, right? I mean, I was worried about, you know, Kyle Tucker not being able to hit. And Coomer's like, don't worry about it, bud. He'll be just fine. And Coomer was white, right? And I was wrong. But, I mean, this is bad news, to your point. Taking two steps back to try to take a step forward – and I mean, where does he rank now? I mean, where would is he even on the is he even the on the radar?
100?
Is he on the, you know, I mean,
in baseball? Is he on that list? The top 100?
No,
he's not.
No.
Yeah. Look, the question is the answer. How disastrous is the news that 149 hitter Colson Montgomery will be heading to the White Sox complex in Arizona for what looks like a crash course on his disastrous, there's a double disastrous swing. When you get repetitious, it means something snapped and you're not following the rules. In an effort to save his failing career, holy God.
Failing career.
The point of it, though, is what's interesting is...
Loaded question.
You often will have a guy that you're trying to find your level. Okay, you did fine here. Can you do fine here? Okay, now we move you to here because we want to get you to there. Now you're going to what? Start demoting a guy to find a level he can compete at? Let's start again. That, and as you say, that will ruin his confidence. This is a desperate move for a player in a desperate situation. It's that simple. The guy had been awarded the starting shortstop job for the White Sox. That's what he's supposed to be doing, and he couldn't get it. He couldn't win the job he was given, and now they're gonna desperately try to fix his desperate swing so the poor desperate player
is that the new word
can get back
disastrous
up to
and desperate.
Desperate.
Remember
White Sox.
Remember the Birmingham project?
Oh my God!
This is just another city in Alabama, the Montgomery project.
Oh my God! Oh, there you go. This is a one-man Birmingham disaster.
I'm not going to take any questions.
Did White Sox GM Chris Getz sound like a guy ready to promote Tim Elko to the major league club after his power burst in Charlotte?
He's hitting the ball very hard, actually harder than he's always hit the ball hard. He's actually increased how hard he's hitting it, and most importantly, how often he's doing it. I believe he's certainly leading the organization in home runs, and I think he's at the top in minor league baseball. Tim's a special guy. He's got tremendous leadership qualities. He impacts others beyond just himself. He's a pretty good defender at first base. He's putting together all around quality at bats. So we're really happy with the development of Tim and know at some point, he could join us here in Chicago.
What did you hear there?
Well, I mean, he said nice things about him. You know what I heard there? Just reading between the lines, they've got a guy that's ready to go. And for whatever reason, they're going to try to give Andrew Vaughn one last shot at it. And he talked about how unlucky Vaughn is. This is their new word for him, how unlucky. Hitting the hell out of the ball, just right at people. Oh, guys make spectacular defense plays every time he comes to bat. Otherwise, he'd be leading the league in home runs too. It's just tiresome. Bring this guy up already. The guy is, I mean, if you're not listening to what they are telling you, this guy is screaming, I belong on your horrible team. I will give power to your two-run baseball team, sir. Let me come up there and hit my home runs at the major league level. And maybe you can win more than seven games. Maybe you can get the 10. I don't know what they're waiting on. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's a head-scratcher. What I heard, though, the key word was someday. Someday, Tim Elko. I mean, is it going to have to take an injury to going Vaughn in order to get him up here? Because I don't know what you'd be waiting for.
Well, I think that when you look at last night, Tim Elko had two more hits, and he's doing interviews on the Charlotte bench or showing during the CHSN broadcast, and he looks like a guy who's ready to be promoted. I wonder what they're waiting for. And I think it's in – the only thing you can figure out is that maybe Chris Getz is wanting to promote prospects or wanting to develop prospects who are going to be here when the Sox are more competitive, or they want to – Tim Elko's 26 years old. And perhaps that they are being real hesitant or overly patient because they don't consider him part of their future plans. If he were 22 years old, I think he would be here by now. That's just a fact of prospect life. But when you are struggling to the extent that the Sox are struggling, they're running out of reasons not to promote him. And when you have Steve Stone sitting in the booth talking about Tim Elko after the interview and saying, for an organization that needs power, there it is. And then Steve Stone later saying, after John Schriffen said something about being blocked at first base or working with Andrew Vaughn, Steve Stone again pointing out, there is a designated hitter spot. When you have Steve Stone basically saying it without stressing it, that this should happen, it really should happen.
You know, I mean, Vaughn is 27 years old.
Right.
He's older than this kid. I get it, David. I understand that. But, I mean, Vaughn's not producing anything, and Elko is ready to hit.
I think that's a great question.
All right. Do you believe Ozzie Trapillo will play left tackle? Do you expect him to line up there immediately with Braxton Jones unlikely to play in the offseason and perhaps not until well into training camp?
I'm not quite sure what to think of Ozzie Trapillo after talking to Bill O'Brien yesterday, after talking to some people who believe that he has the footwork to make the transition to left tackle in the NFL. I don't like those kinds of experiments at the NFL level. I think that if you have achieved a level of consistency as a college right tackle or college anything, that and you should probably play that position at the NFL because it translates the quickest and easiest and it provides the most seamless transition. That said, I mean, if you're the Bears, I would probably look at the Darnell Wright moving to left tackle more than I would moving a rookie there because of what I just described. You want certainty, but at the same time, that potentially weakens two positions. And I don't know if you want to do that. This offensive line conundrum, I think, is rooted in the uncertainty over Braxton Jones's health. And until we know a little bit more about that, when he will be available, then I think that will help answer the question. But you did draft a right tackle, an offensive tackle, in the second round. Maybe they don't know yet how he will look, and Ben Johnson has his own ideas about that. But Bill Bryan acknowledged there are subtleties that are significant when you're playing both sides at that position, at the offensive tackle spot. So thing is, we can think we know, but we don't. And I don't even know if the Bears are sure yet where his best spot will be.
Well, I think that might be it, right? The Bears may not know. But we had fun with this yesterday, Mully. I'm just going to keep going to this.
Okay.
It could become a little bit of a running bit. The four-letter network, they have depth charts for all the NFL teams.
Yep.
And right now, your starting right tackle is Ozzie Trapillo. And backing him up on the second team is Darnell Wright, according to the four-letter network. I don't know that they'll actually let us know this. I don't know that they'll let reporters' eyes on this. But I would not be surprised up at Halas Hall when they get back up there for their next little voluntary or three-day mini camp or whatever it is, if Darnell Wright is taking the reps that Braxton Jones is missing out on, and they're seeing what exactly Ozzie Trapillo looks like as a right tackle in this league. So that would not surprise me, but David, I do agree that seems like, you know, moving two guys around to solve a problem, which usually ends up being a bigger problem.
Well, you know, if he's going to be a swing tackle, then he's going to have to learn to play some left tackle for an emergency. So I think he opens his career as a left tackle. You've got a starting right tackle. You spent a lot of draft capital on him. And your reputation is riding on him too, so I would say you can't get rid of you can't bench or somehow have this guy starting ahead of your right tackle. Are you moving him to left? I wouldn't be in a hurry to do that. I would look at the guy at left tackle. You know, the how tall is he?
6'8", 316 pounds.
Okay, don't you worry about guys getting their knees rolled. I mean, I'm not making it up. The taller players are kind of sometimes have some leg problems because if guys are rolling in a pile.
But he hasn't had an injury history, so I guess that I would say no. I don't worry that much
about
that.
There are people that just worry about that. Who's the kid the Bears had that
– Mark Colombo.
Colombo wound up in Dallas, but he suffered that injury.
True.
And they were mad at Big Cat because I think it was Big Cat that fell on his leg. I mean, it just – that happens in the NFL. That's why you worry about the spindly guys, you know, tall guys. But I would line him up and let him play some left tackle. Why not? Who's your left tackle? If Kieran Amagaji has an injury or isn't ready to go – if he hasn't improved himself.
So even though it's a premium position, you would prefer to keep Darnell Wright on the right side than see. Okay.
I would, personally.
Yeah. It's a conversation, though.
I think it's definitely a conversation.
It's one they would have to have.
And who's more likely to be able to do it. But for your camp, when you're just getting going, you can give the guy a ton of reps. You can work him at a position that he might have to play in emergency. And you can see what he can do, and you can make a judgment.
Player input is also important in a conversation
no
like
doubt
this.
About
Darnell
it.
Wright's comfort level, it should be your priority.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a good question.
What is your take on Rick Tocchet deciding to leave Vancouver Canucks, meaning there are now 8 NHL teams speaking and seeking new coaches? Are the Blackhawks a desirable spot, or will it take too long to complete to attract the top candidates?
You know, Tocchet was with Vancouver. Do we know anyone from Vancouver? Is there anybody from that part of the world that might be a huge, important person to worry about in terms of the Blackhawks? I don't know if I honest to God, do not know if the Blackhawks' job is a desirable one. I think they got a lot of young talent. I think they're going to be a really fast team. I also have no idea how their depth is going to be, how good they're going to be, how coaches like to put groups together. You like to have people who have done something before. You like to have a middle class, right? You don't want just old age and young age. You would like to have some veteran good in their prime players. If you were coaching, you want to win. So I'm very curious to see who they get. You know, the college option seemed like the way to go for the Blackhawks with their college age kids, but I don't know that that's really correct. I think that I think some of these available candidates they need to look at, and they need to figure out what people can do to aid the development and progress of younger players. And I'll be very curious to see who they hire. But I really want to know if there's anyone out there that's dying to get this job.
I think this is a great thing to talk about. I mean, it's an original six team. They've had recent success. They have, it seemed like, one of the top young talents in the league. Yet a guy who's making $700,000 a year turns down a multi-million, multi-year contract to stay in college? I mean, huh? It's a head-scratcher. I can't wait to hear what Chelios thinks about this.
David Carl turned down a multi-year, multi-million dollar offer from the Blackhawks to stay at Denver. If he accepts a job at another NHL team, it will be very embarrassing for the Blackhawks. If he stays at college and he's more comfortable with that environment, you understand it. But the Blackhawks are at a crossroads. This could potentially be a crisis. If you are not a desirable destination any longer, then you have to take a good hard look at why. And you have to start to ask really hard questions about, can you close a deal? Do you have enough presence in the room when you're trying to sell your organization to somebody who is available and qualified as a head coach? So without David Carl, you've got to move on, and you've got to move on quickly. Rick Tocchet should be on that list. He is an NFL retread, as they say, if you put him in a category, but he also was qualified, and he's leaving Vancouver. You look at another possibility. The top name on anybody's list in the NHL among those openings is Mike Sullivan. He's got Stanley Cups in his past and his resume. He's the most qualified coach available from the Penguins. He also was part of the Hawk organization back in 2015. I think he's more likely to land at a team ready to win now, New York, Boston, or Philly. But you have to at least explore that because you are an Original Six team in Chicago, a great hockey city when things are going well. Then you've got Jay Woodcroft, the former Oilers coach. He makes sense. Jeff Blashill, the former Red Wings coach. He makes sense to talk to. Todd Nelson, who's got three Calder Cups as an AHL coach. He makes sense. There's five right there that you have to start with on a short list. That would be mine. You have to ask some tough questions, but you still can end up with a favorable outcome because this still, with all that talent, can be a good job.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Do you like the White Sox new Bulls uniform or City Connect uniforms based on the Bulls?
We had Brooks Boyer on the Chicago Lead yesterday. I thought he was going to ask me to model it. He's very proud of it. They are very Bullsy. There are reasons why they're very Bullsy. And this is all over Major League Baseball. You see this happening. Two things come to mind. Yeah, I'm not. We talked about this a little bit, and they are going to wear them. Luis Robert Jr. looks terrific in it, by the way. I wondered if he could hit the three because he looks like.
Very elegant looking man.
Very comfortable.
Tall, thin athlete. He should. If the baseball thing doesn't work out,
I know they had to do this because of MLB initiative, but I do. Your uniforms, your city uniforms, the Black Friday Southside city uniforms were great. They were the best in baseball. Why change that? But I know they had to. And number two, at least they're not yellow.
Yeah, that Boston uniform
like the Red Sox.
That was horrible.
I mean, I don't hate it. Believe it or not, and if the purpose of these are to sell merch, these are going to sell.
Yeah,
These are not items. Even if it was a Cubs thing, I don't buy this type of stuff. But I see why they would sell. I think people will gravitate to this stuff. I have seen a lot of my friends that are Cub fans that have already bought the new City Connect jersey
because of the
sweatshirts. Bulls? The hoodies, the caps, all of it. I even saw one guy with the hooded short sleeve sweatshirt.
You mean the Cubs version of it?
Cubs version
of it.
Those
really powder blue things?
Yeah, the Expo ripoff that they did. Yep. Mm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think Brooks can be proud of it because it's going to move. Merch is going to move, and that's the goal with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I love Brooks. Personally, I think I'm kind of got a ruddy complexion. I'm having a hard time with the pink right now that I'm wearing. It kind of, I wear red and I look like either deeply embarrassed or extremely angry. It's just sadly my natural coloring. A lot of people think that I'm angry and
you think
I'm coming
you look calmer in blue?
I think I do. I look at me. The red. Thank
sorry,
you.
Something
the,
I said.
I worry that if I put on the red Bulls uniform that the Sox now are wearing, I would just look like a guy who's really mad at the team, and I'm not going for that look. I wear it naturally.
But you like them. You like these, on others.
I think they're great. And if I didn't look like me, I would wear it. I just think, unfortunately, that I would look either deeply embarrassed or very angry, which is kind of how you look when I watch the Sox.
All of these city-wide or City Connect uniforms are kind of softball-y.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
The
you
Cubs,
know, it's,
the Red Sox.
It's really interesting. You know, the whole point, and they do it very well in the Premier League in England, they just want to sell jerseys. So they're constantly going through. They have like a home jersey, like they have your normal home in a way, and then they have this other jersey. Every year they change their jerseys. And it's crazy how that can work. At one point, United had these like gray jerseys. The players claimed they couldn't see anybody in them. They couldn't pick out players. They just would blend into the crowd. So they called them like the invisible uniform. And next thing you know, they're on sale for like $5 because no one would ever wear them. You want to be seen. I think these are red. These will look good. I think it depends on who you are. But it just reminds you too much about the troubles a couple different franchises are having.
It does.
All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you think of this exchange with Matt LaFleur about Ben Johnson? Is it fair to say Johnson's arrival and rhetoric has revived the Packers-Bears rivalry?
Do you have beef with Coach Johnson?
I was waiting for this. I don't know Ben Johnson.
So do you have beef?
Do I have beef? I don't know Ben Johnson. I respect him as a football coach. He did a nice job.
Yeah, but are we not feeling the same thing right now?
Yeah, well, yeah.
But if you don't know him, why is it tight in here?
It's not tight. I'm not tight. I thought it was interesting.
What was interesting?
I thought the press conference was interesting, but I don't have beef with him. I don't get all into that stuff.
You'll harness it.
He'll get the eye emojis after a win. You'll send.
I don't have his number, so that won't happen.
You gonna Jim Harbaugh him after a game?
No, you beat him? I would never do that.
Do you have the strength to do that?
I don't know. Probably not. Apparently not. Apparently not.
No, I'd never do that.
Hey, what's your beef? That's from the Bussin' with the Boys podcast.
Well, I think it's healthy for the rivalry. I do enjoy the back and forth between the two head coaches. It's clear that it's a thing. Matt LaFleur has addressed it now twice in the last week. He's been asked about it. Ben Johnson hasn't addressed it, maybe because he hasn't been asked about it. But what time is it? Next time he's in front of a microphone, he probably will. He doesn't seem to be shy, and he certainly wasn't on day one of his Bears tenure, when he pointed out how much he enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur. He name-checked him like Ben Johnson was the guy that beat Matt LaFleur twice a year. So this is fun. This is what you get when you hire a very confident, charismatic head coach. And I don't have any problem with it, provided it's still respectful and they're not crossing any lines here. So if it makes Matt LaFleur uncomfortable, good. And if it makes Ben Johnson more empowered or more confident, fine. You know what will make this a better rivalry, though? When the Bears actually win a couple games in a row against the Packers.
I kind of enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur twice a year.
That was a super chesty comment, and yeah. I'm all in, and I'm on it. I love it. It is great for the rivalry. The booing of the Packer fans when the Bears were making their pick, good, even though it upset me, that's good for the rivalry. Seth Rollins' response introducing the picks, good awesome. For the rivalry. The Bears' response to the Packers' booing with that, on social media with the Santos walk-off field goal in the last game, good for the rivalry. What might not be good is that I will predict, along with the 10 wins that the Bears will have next year, I haven't gotten to 11 yet, I'm still at 10, is that this Bears-Packers rivalry will likely be the first Sunday night football game of the season based on all this rhetoric.
Well, I find it just wildly coincidental that during his storied playing career, it is a fact of his life that that Matt LaFleur played in the indoor league for the Omaha Beef. So that's his beef. Yeah, he wow. once was the backup quarterback for the Beef.
Is that a fact?
That is a fact of his life.
How long did it take you to get that one?
I'm just letting you know.
That's impressive research.
Yeah.
That's impressive research.
You might not have known that he was in the National Indoor League as the backup quarterback at the Beef. I really like the idea that you challenge a guy who has had his way with the Bears for as long as he had. And I like the idea that we get to learn a little more about the personality of a Matt LaFleur, because he doesn't really show any personality. I really don't know much about the guy. I don't get a lot of sense of him as a dude. He seems like one of those guys, like one of those kind of, you know, whatever, the Shanahan McVay tree of guys. He just got in with that group and bounced around with those guys, and he's one of many. He's right?
A good football coach, though.
He's had a great career as a football coach. But I want to get to know him more, and I think this is bringing out a little personality from the guy. Yeah. I kind of like it.
I like it, too.
But I'm not into this Bears-Packers rivalry, because to me it's not a rivalry. It's been a dominance, and until the Bears push it back and take it back, and this is the way to do it. Try to get under the guy's skin, try to do that stuff, and then beat him. And if they do that, then I'm on board with the rivalry. But you can't be, you know, throwing stones at the castle when you are nowhere near the inside of it.
To your point, Matt LaFleur was a member of the 2024 Omaha Beef Hall of Fame class.
See, now you're rewarding the guy for what he did after he left the beef.
And you know what's ironic about that, or maybe that's the wrong word, but it was amusing about this class of the 2024 Omaha Beef Hall of Fame class?
Yeah.
It included a player by the name, an offensive lineman, Chad Mustard.
Wow. I would not want Mustard anywhere near my beef.
Ranch, he's a stud.
Ranch dressing, yes. Mustard, no.
Oh boy!
Oh boy!
That's so funny.
But I think you're right about LaFleur. He's an excellent football coach. Give him his due. He should be respected. I don't mind the back and forth, but the way you make this a rivalry is not with talk, with action.
You got to beat him.
Beat him.
Beat him. Stop talking about it. Beat him.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. That is the pick six and the extra point. We're going to get to your calls. 312-644. 67-67 Mullion on the score.
Where's the beef?
Kind of both legs were just in the quads area, were cramping, and it was kind of an easy, had to take him out, but he feels fine now, no issues, so hopefully it was just that.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. That is the voice of Craig Council, and he's talking about Shota Imanaga leaving the game after, it was 87 pitches, I believe.
Yeah.
As I looked at
it, he pitched five innings, so it was in the sixth.
He had
87 pitches, 56 strikes.
And he was having a really good night,
yep.
But he had some issues with cramping in his legs, and he left the game.
Nice bounce-back performance. You needed that from Shota. You need that in that rotation. He is the ace, undisputed ace, now that Justin Steele is out. The guy who would be a strong candidate to be your number two starter goes tonight, Matthew Boyd. Jameson Taillon also was very good the other night, as we saw against the Phillies. Cubs starting pitching has been able to kind of weather the storm without Justin Steele. The bullpen had a good night. They threw four scoreless, and Palencia to Theobar to Cosgrove. Nice to see Cosgrove on the mound. Made a nice play at first base as well. So, Molly, that was a good victory against a struggling Pirates team, a young team that they're not drawing anything in Pittsburgh. 9,400 people there last night. It had a very minor league-ish feel to watching the game, and I think, as you pointed out, it felt like that was almost one of those games during COVID where you're like, you could hear everything. You could hear conversations probably along the third baseline with among fans, but it was a very necessary victory for the Cubs. They took care of business, and they need to do the same thing tonight because tomorrow they face Paul Skenes.
Yeah, and Paul Skenes is awful good, and that should be a fun one because – you got the best offense in baseball, the Cubs, going against maybe the best young pitcher.
Say that again.
In baseball.
Please say that again.
Best offense in baseball.
That's a really good sound.
It's true.
I know. You're not exaggerating. And it's a really interesting thing to say when you consider Dansby Swanson isn't hitting his weight and has been disappointing. Third base has been a disaster.
Yep.
Okay, that's overstating it. We'll save disastrous for your Colson Montgomery take. It has been a disappointment at third base.
For my question,
yes,
anyway.
Your question, yeah. So John Birdie had a good night last night. That was nice to see. So you start to envision, well, what would the Cubs be with Birdie in there every day? He gives them speed. Mm-hmm. If he can play good enough defense, he might be your best option. And until you start to look at the trade market and see who's available closer to the deadline. I think it's unlikely they're going to make a trade right now. And you don't really have to because the rest of your lineup is performing at a very high level. Carson Kelly batting cleanup, homered again. He's got 7. Who had Carson Kelly having 7 home runs by the end of April? Nobody.
No, he's been phenomenal. I mean, not just good, phenomenal. A lot better than you expected him to be. And he's been a part of it. I wouldn't say he's been the largest part of it, but he's been a big part of it. And he has really aided and helped them. But obviously, you know, in order, it would be Kyle Tucker, followed by Pete Crow Armstrong,
yes,
as sort of the breakout guys of this season.
They're what make this season different.
Yes.
So far.
Yes.
This is not the Pete Crow Armstrong that was in the lineup last year.
No,
it's different. He's already got 6 home runs by the end of April, and he's hitting for power, and he's still playing the defense, and he's running around the bases. He's playing at an all-star level. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Without Cody Bellinger, who they haven't missed as much as I thought they would, Kyle Tucker and PCA have stepped forward and been the element that they were lacking last year consistently. And then Carson Kelly comes out of nowhere. And let's face it, Suzuki, who had a rough offseason. We were talking about, you know, we got to get rid of him. He's got to waive his no-trade clause. He's not going to be happy as a DH. He's going to be a guy that is going to take a step backward. Heck, you look at Seiya Suzuki, he's hit 7 home runs. That balance throughout the lineup lengthens it and gives them that fear factor for opposing pitchers.
Yeah.
It's an intimidating group.
I see a statistic yesterday that they didn't strike out in a game for the first time
since 2013.
Yeah.
First time in 12 years.
Can you even imagine that? A run of whatever it was, 1,800 games with a strikeout in the game. They did not strike out yesterday.
It's the kind of thing your hitting coach loves because it reflects just a consistent approach at the plate. You're making contact. You're being selective. You're not chasing. And that is what everybody does.
Throughout the lineup.
1 through 9.
But it's like throughout the entire organization at this point.
That's it. It's an organizational approach to hitting.
Yes.
And you're seeing it with guys who are coming up like PCA and Amaya who have come through the system.
How about Amaya?
Oh, goodness sakes. Yeah, he has turned it around. He's got that discipline. And you know what? It's also good when you talk about competition.
Yes.
When Amaya doesn't play, he sees Carson Kelly hitting home runs. When Carson Kelly doesn't play, he sees Amaya coming through with big hits.
That
catching position has been potent offensively.
It's really good. It's been great. And they've got the best offense in baseball. I don't think there's any shadow of a doubt. And it's why they're as good as they are. And, you know, you got to have something. And they've got it. They've got an offense that just keeps working for them. It's been great. Great stuff.
It's great
all the
to
way
see.
Around. No question.
And now they get Shota back. Hopefully he won't miss a start. We'll talk about how serious that is because you don't want that to linger.
No. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.